Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 15, starting with Text 1. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Suta Uvacha Evam Krishna Sata Krishna Pratra Radhya Vikalpita Nana Sankaspatam Rupam Krishna Vishleshakarsita. Suta Goswami said, Arjuna, the celebrated friend of Lord Krishna, was grief-stricken because of his strong feelings of separation from Krishna. Over and above all Maharaj Yudhisthira's speculative inquiries. Purport, being too much aggrieved, Arjuna practically became choked up, and therefore it was not possible for him to reply properly to the various speculative inquiries of Maharaj Yudhisthira. Om Gyanate Mirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurundalitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Maha Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Tapitam Yena Bhutale Shayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vancha Kalpa Tarubhyasya Vipa Sindhu Vaivacha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Nama Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasade Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So you can hear me even though there's the fan? It's not a problem. So I'm lecturing in different places, so it's almost like new people, and now we're in Vrindavan. So I'll just give a little bit overview to help us get the context in which this is really, this particular story begins, in one sense, back in the fourth chapter. Because in the fourth chapter of the Bhagavatam, the sages of Namasharanya begin to ask Suta Goswami about the history of the Bhagavatam. The history of the Srimad Bhagavatam is the history of its speakers and hearers. What actually happened is the sages of Namasharanya, you're familiar with the Bhagavatam, they asked six questions to Suta Goswami. And the last question was, now that Krishna has left the planet, where will knowledge and religion be protected or maintained? And Suta Goswami answered that it would be in the Bhagavatam, which is as brilliant as the sun, and for those who've lost their vision in Kali Yuga, they become enlightened by the Bhagavatam. And then he explained that he heard the Bhagavatam and he realized it, and he would explain it to the sages of Namasharanya. So the sages of Namasharanya became very, very excited because they were going to hear from someone who not only heard the message but realized it. Hearing the message, you can have theoretical knowledge, but realizing the message means you actually see it as truth. The whole Srimad Bhagavatam is meant to bring you to the platform of actually seeing reality. And reality is Krishna. Vedyam Vastavam Atra Vastu. It explains the Vastu, or the substance, or what's actually there. And it frees one from the illusion that there's something separate from Krishna. So one who actually realizes the Srimad Bhagavatam actually sees Krishna. He actually sees the truth, just as Vyasadeva actually saw the truth. So they were very enthusiastic to hear from Sutta Goswami because he was realized in the message. And then they wanted to understand something about the history of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So they asked about its speakers and hearers. And basically it means Vyasadeva. Okay. It means Vyasadeva, Shukadeva Goswami and Maharaj Prakrit. So from the fourth chapter on, it begins to answer their inquiries about the history. The fourth, fifth, and sixth chapter dealt with Vyasadeva because their first question was how Vyasadeva became inspired to hear the Srimad Bhagavatam. And the whole story of Vyasadeva, enlightenment, his realization of the truth, the story of Narada Muni enlightening him, which includes Narada Muni explaining his own life story to show how the Bhagavatam enlightens people, because he became enlightened by serving the Bhakti Vedantas and getting their mercy. And getting their mercy means he heard the Bhagavatam from them. And then a little bit about Sukadeva Goswami was explained. And then in the seventh chapter, they began to answer the questions about Maharaj Prakrit. Sage of Namashranya asked several questions about Maharaj Prakrit, including his birth, his activities, and his death. So in the middle of the seventh chapter, they begin to explain about his birth. Not even his birth, no. They explain his history, which begins when he was in the womb of his mother, because he was Parikshit. Parikshit means the examiner. And he saw Krishna in the womb. So seventh chapter, do you know the name of the seventh chapter? Son of Drona Punish. It's about Ashvatthama. Son of Dronacharya is Ashvatthama. Because Ashvatthama, come in. Okay. Because Ashvatthama threw the Brahmastra weapon at the womb of Uttara. So that's where the history begins of Maharaj Prakrit. It begins right in the womb. It's very interesting. Then I'm giving an overview so we can get to today's verse. So when they start telling the history of Maharaj Prakrit being saved in the womb, then Krishna actually manifests in the womb and protects. Actually, the embryo was practically aborted. And then at that time, see, it's the history of Maharaj Prakrit that's being discussed. So there's nothing that happens in his history beyond the time that he saw Krishna in the womb and his birth. But there's a lot that had happened around that time in relationship to Krishna, because Krishna is introduced within the Srimad Bhagavatam. So then Sutta Goswami, he begins to explain about Krishna. Because Krishna has been introduced in this question about, let's hear about the history of Maharaj Prakrit, and they begin to describe his birth. So they begin to describe in the womb, and then Krishna comes and saves him. And then they begin to describe Krishna. So Krishna becomes introduced in the Srimad Bhagavatam, and they describe Krishna leaving Hastinapur. And we begin to see the essence of the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the intense devotional sentiments of the devotees for Krishna, which is actually the prayojana, or the goal. The goal is this intensified and perfect affection for Krishna. So it's described because Krishna begins to leave, and then Kunti comes, and we see her sentiments, and she offers her prayers. Then Krishna's about to leave again. Then we see Yudhisthira coming. He's aggrieved because of all the people that were killed to enthrone him. And that leads to Krishna coming at the time of death to Bhishma Dev. Then he's leaving again, then he stays to see Subhadra, and then he leaves Hastinapur, and we see the devotional sentiments of the residents of Hastinapur. Describes that the ladies of Hastinapur, when they saw Krishna leave, they began to cry. And because they had so much affection for Krishna, they were trying to hold back their tears, because it's very inauspicious when someone leaves to be in distress or to be angry. And then it's described that they had so much affection for Krishna, but they hadn't actually even seen Krishna. They hadn't even met Krishna. It's just that Krishna was in Kurukshetra, and they kept on hearing stories about Krishna. So they had such intense affection for Krishna that not only they were crying, but they were trying to hold back their tears because they didn't want to create an inauspicious atmosphere for Krishna leaving. But how did they get such devotion? Simply they heard about Krishna and they discussed among themselves. So we see the intense affection of the residents of Hastinapur as Krishna leaves, and then he enters Dwarka. And when he enters Dwarka, we see the intense affection of the devotees there. And then Suta Goswami, this all happened between the time that Maharaj Prickett, because it's really the story of Maharaj Prickett. These are just other topics that Suta Goswami couldn't help but explain. Because it's also important when you describe the history of someone to describe a little bit about the time of his birth. Just like in the Srila Prabhupada Lilamrita, you know, they show the World War II war and different things. So it helps you understand the person. So this is Maharaj Prickett, who's born, who's protected in the womb by Krishna, and then is born at the time of Krishna's intense presence with devotees who happen to be Maharaj Prickett's relatives. Because Maharaj Prickett is the son of Abhimanyu, who's the son of Arjuna. And Arjuna is the son of Kunti, who is the sister of Krishna's father. So basically it's explaining the devotees, the family of Maharaj Prickett, and then it begins to describe the birth of Maharaj Prickett, and that was chapter 12. It describes his glorious, his birth, his auspicious birth. Then in chapter 13, in continuing the story of Maharaj Prickett, now remember, I'm discussing this because it's all about Maharaj Prickett directly or indirectly, because that's the subject matter. So then what happened is they described the story of King Dhritarashtra becoming liberated. What does that have to do with Maharaj Prickett? Sridhar Swami in the commentary says that unless you discuss this story of Dhritarashtra being leaves home by the preaching of Vidura, you can't really get to the activities of Maharaj Prickett. Why? Because unless Dhritarashtra leaves home, then Yudhisthira would not leave home. Because this is what awakened the spirit of renunciation in Yudhisthira. Vidura came back to the palace and he preached to Dhritarashtra. Then Dhritarashtra left home. Then Maharaj Yudhisthira was completely shocked by it. Maharaj Yudhisthira was completely shocked by it. And then, very interesting, and it's related to here, that because Vidura had left home and Dhritarashtra had left home, then there was no one to preach to Yudhisthira who was aggrieved. Why was Yudhisthira aggrieved? Yudhisthira was aggrieved because he was in the mood of protecting Maharaj, of protecting Dhritarashtra, because Dhritarashtra was blind, he was dependent on him, he was sitting in the palace. And it's also a very, very interesting pastime, because Narada Muni, he comes and he preaches to Yudhisthira that you're actually an illusion. Because what are you thinking? You're thinking that you're the protector of Maharaj Yudhisthira. This is an illusion. As the protector of Dhritarashtra, this is an illusion. Just as Dhritarashtra was an illusion, thinking that you were protecting him, and he had to be preached to by Vidura, you're also an illusion, because you're thinking you're the protector of him. That's an illusion. You're not seeing Krishna, who's the actual protector. Just as a player takes playthings, so similarly Krishna's taking one, he's moving one, he's the controller, he's the protector. Then is a famous verse, just as those who have no arms or something are food for those who have two arms, and those who have no legs are two legs are food for those who have four legs. So similarly, Krishna is maintaining everyone. Is an arrangement by Krishna to maintain everyone. So don't think you're his maintainer. And don't think you're his protector, because Krishna's arranged that one person is food for another. So you're an illusion. Your level of observation is deficient. You're not actually seeing Krishna, who's the controller. So he preached to him. And then what this will lead to Yudhisthira going home and leaving home. And Yudhisthira leaving home means the enthronement of Maharaj Prickett. So unless this story of Dhritarashtra is told, you won't get to the point where Yudhisthira leaves home and Maharaj Prickett is enthroned. So then in the last chapter, what happened was after Narada Muni left, and he preached to Yudhisthira, and he said that you can't do anything. This is the will of providence. There, you know, Dhritarashtra left, Gandhari left, Vidura, everyone left. And he preached him, and he was pacified. And then Yudhisthira began to see various omens and various things he saw, like people becoming selfish, greedy, that were unheard of. And he began to think that something must be wrong. And he began to think that maybe Krishna has left the planet, because Narada Muni actually had hinted that Krishna left the planet. And then Arjuna had gone back to Dwarka with Krishna. Krishna has so much attachment for the residents of Hastinapur that he couldn't leave for so many months after the battlefield of Kurukshetra. He was stopped by Uttara. Then after he was stopped by Uttara, then he was stopped by Kunti. Then he was stopped by, after Kunti, he was stopped by Yudhisthira. After he was stopped by Yudhisthira, then he was stopped by Subhadra. And then after he left, then he came back. Because for some, the Rajasuya Yajna or some sacrifice, he agreed to officiate. But he took Arjuna back with him. And then Yudhisthira says, where is Arjuna? It's been 7 months. And then Arjuna comes back. And then, of course, he starts to see all these inauspicious omens. And he's beginning to think that something is wrong. And then he sees that Arjuna is feeling very, very dejected and depressed. And he suspects that Krishna has left the planet, but he cannot ask him directly. This is also a point that no one volunteers bad news in a Vedic culture. Vidura knew that Krishna had left. When Vidura came back to Hastinapur to preach to Dhritarashtra, he had already met Uddhava in Vrindavan. So he already knew. Narada Muni also knew. No one would tell him. Arjuna also knew. Nor did he really want to find. So he began to ask him questions about the family, but he wouldn't ask directly about Krishna. First he would ask about the relatives, and then slowly he started asking questions about Krishna. And basically the commentators say each of the questions is Govinda well? Is Govinda well? Then he looks at Arjuna and he's trying to say, what's wrong? And then he begins to describe whether he's unable to execute the various duties of a Kshatriya, because this would disturb a Kshatriya. Anything but asking if Krishna has left the planet. It's just too painful for him. He has too much attachment to Krishna. So he begins to ask Arjuna, were you unable to protect the cows or the Brahmins or some deserving woman? Or could you not feed someone who is hungry? These are things that would upset a Kshatriya that he wasn't able to protect. And he begins to ask all these questions, and I'm getting up to today's verse. And then finally he says, or is it that you are feeling empty for all time because you might have lost your most intimate friend, Lord Krishna? Oh, my brother Arjuna, I can think of no other reason for you becoming so dejected. And now today's verse. Siddha Goswami said, Arjuna, the celebrated friend of Lord Krishna, was grief-stricken because of his strong feelings of separation from Krishna. Over and above all, Maharaj Yudhisthira's speculative inquiries. Shokena Shrishyad Vandana Ritsaroja Hataprabha Vibhuntam Evanusmaram Nashaknot Pratibhashitam. Due to grief, Arjuna's mouth and lotus-like heart had dried up. Therefore, his body lost all luster. Now, remembering the Supreme Lord, he could hardly utter a word in reply. So this is very interesting in the Srimad Bhagavatam, that right at the very beginning, the story is beginning to tell about the goal of life, which is intense affection for Krishna. And one symptom of intense attachment is that in the absence of Krishna, the affection for Krishna even deepens even more. And this is the perfection of life. This is called rasa. Rasa is when affection for Krishna is perfect. And it's composed of different ecstatic emotional symptoms. So here in Arjuna it says shokena. This is bereavement. This is a symptom of intense affection for Krishna. There are different emotions that come from one's affection for Krishna. It's described just like from the ocean, waves come. So if you have... Haribo, come here. So if you have affection for Krishna, from your particular mood of love will come different emotions. Like if the person who you love is in danger, fear will come. If the person who you love has died, then lamentation will come. If the person you love did something great, jubilation will come. And these increase the affection, so it's shokena up due to bereavement, trishya vadana, drying up of the mouth. So then, due to that intense affection, then there'll be certain bodily symptoms that will happen, even involuntarily. Just like if you love someone and something happens, you may faint. So that faint is involuntary, but it's an expression of the love. Let's say you saw that someone that you love was in trouble and you fainted. That fainting would be an expression of that love, and it would intensify that love. So this is what Krishna is enjoying. Krishna is enjoying the love of his devotees when it's perfect. And this is a manifestation of Krishna's internal potency. And he's exchanging with his internal potency. And that's what Vyasadeva's vision was. When Vyasadeva actually saw the truth, he saw Krishna and Krishna's energies. In the Bhagavatam it describes specifically he saw Mayachatarapasayam. He saw that Maya was under Krishna's control, behind Krishna. But the commentary said, and Prabhupada explained it, just like when there's the moon, there's the sunshine. So when you say he saw Krishna, he saw his energies. And he also saw his internal energy. And therefore he saw the pastimes of Krishna, because the pastimes of Krishna is Krishna exchanging with his own internal potency, which is the Ladini Shakti, the love of God, which is in the devotees' hearts. And this is what Krishna is actually enjoying, the love of his devotees. and he's aware of that love. So shushyat vandana, drying up of the mouth, the bodily luster becomes lost. And he's not able to reply. It's just like that. Sometimes, even in a Vyasa Puja offering, the disciple offers the offering to the guru. Out of some affection, the disciple begins to cry. And then when he begins to cry, it becomes, you know, the affection that caused them to cry, which is their guru bhakti, becomes even more intense. And this is what happens in the spiritual world. So this type of separation is very difficult to understand, and there's very little parallel in our material experience. Prabhupada described that, he gave the example to the hippies, he wanted to describe Krishna consciousness, he described it as an ocean of LSD. Because he couldn't, there was no way for him to describe how intense it was on the basis of their experience. Because we know, you've studied Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, so what's prema? Sandrandana Vishesha. So what is it? Is it if you take the highest material pleasure and you multiply it by a trillion fold, it doesn't even equal a drop of the happiness of Krishna consciousness. So how can you describe these symptoms? And what to speak? How can you understand the love of the residents of Vrindavan when in present-day Kali Yuga you don't even understand the love in the material world? You don't even have experience in the material world of love. We only experience practically lust in the material world and selfishness. This is very intense spiritual emotion. Kritrena samstavya suchaha panina vrijya netriyo parokshena samunada panayotantya katara. With great difficulty he checked the tears of grief that smeared his eyes. He was very distressed because Lord Sri Krishna was out of his sight, and he increasingly felt affection for them. So tears were in Arjuna's eyes, and they were already out of his eyes, and they were being wiped by his palms. And his voice was indistinct because his throat was choked up, and his voice was interrupted by his sobbing. The commentators described it. This was the Arjuna, the powerful warrior. And he's just broken up. Because these are the questions. Yudhisthira asked him, has Krishna left? And he can't even bear to speak about it. Sakyam maitrim saryadam cha saratyadi shisam smaran nipam magaja mityaha bashpa gagadaya gira. Remembering Lord Krishna and his well wishes, benefactions, intimate familiar relations, and his chariot driving, Arjuna, overwhelmed and breathing very heavily, began to speak. He begins to remember his friendship with Krishna. And here it describes different types of friends. There's all different types of friendship in Sanskrit. Sakya, Maitre, Soryadam. So, in other words, in friendship, there's different types. You can be a friend. A father can be a friend. Like, the guru can be a friend. The teacher can be a friend. He's your well-wisher. And then there's intimate friendship. And then, sodiyadam, ridam means in heart, when you're very intimate and close in heart. That's also a type of friendship. And this type of friendship, he had so many types of friendship with Arjuna. Remembering Krishna, because Krishna was his well-wisher. He was his benefactor. He was this type of friend. But he was always intimate in heart. as Prabhupada said in the purport, he was not only a well-wisher, but a benefactor. To make it more perfect, the Lord tied him into familiar relation by arranging Subhadra's marriage with him. So he married Krishna's sister. So this friendship was so deep. And not only that, he was his chariot driver. He was such a friend. He was such a friend that he actually became his servant. And this shows the intimacy of the friendship. This shows the intimacy of the friendship. If you see in the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam, the first time that we see Krishna, in both cases, the first time we see Krishna in the Bhagavatam is on the end of the battlefield of Kurukshetra. In the Bhagavad Gita, it's on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. And the first time we see him is on the chariot. Because the greatness of Krishna, or the greatness of a person, is not his position, but his personality. And personality means reciprocating love. So a great person is one who reciprocates love. You can have a high position and be a tyrant. That doesn't make you a great person. So we say that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's the most expert in reciprocating love. Therefore, in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, it says, Akila Rasamrita Murti. The first thing, Krishna is Akila Rasamrita Murti. He's the embodiment of perfect, affectionate dealings. And therefore, we don't see him initially in his position. In fact, we not only don't see him in his position, but we see him in a subservient position to his devotee to highlight his supremacy as his devotion and love and reciprocation and loving dealings, and not just his position. So this is the relationship between Krishna and his devotee. And therefore, Arjuna is devastated when he has to remember that Krishna has left. Arjuna uvacha vanchitoham maharaja harina bandurupina yename paritam tejo deva vismapanam. Arjuna said, O King, the Supreme Personality of Godhead Hari, who treated me exactly like an intimate friend, has left me alone. Thus my astounding power, which astonished even the demigods, is no longer with me. So Arjuna is not only remembering that Krishna left, but the constant remembrance of Krishna's departure is that he's lost all his powers. And why has he lost all his powers? Because all powers are coming from Krishna. Prabhupada quotes in the purport from the Bhagavad Gita 10:41, anyone specifically powerful and opulent in wealth, strength, beauty, knowledge, and all that is material desirable is considered but a product of an insignificant portion of the complete whole of my energy. All vibhutis, that's why in the Bhagavad Gita, in the 10th chapter, in the 9th chapter, the 7th chapter, it describes all the vibhutis, all these opulences. They're Krishna's. All beauty, all strength, all knowledge, anything great, any ability is Krishna's. So when Krishna comes to this world, he comes with a purpose. And therefore, he empowers his devotees with different vibhutis or opulences to achieve that purpose. And when Krishna's mission is finished, he takes away those vibhutis of powers. So when Krishna left the planet, it was because his mission was finished. Previously, when Narada Muni was describing to Yudhisthira, he told Narada Muni that you're not the controller, Krishna is the controller in the form of time. And he began to describe Kala Rupa. And then he was describing the form of time. He said, this Krishna is Kala Rupa. Kala Rupa, or the power of this world, that's Krishna who has appeared. And now his mission is finished and you should rest. So all our powers are actually Krishna's powers. So when Krishna left, I'm going to read this purport. No one therefore can be independently powerful in any measure without being endowed by the Lord. When the Lord descends on the earth along with his eternal, ever-liberated associates, he not only displays the divine energy possessed by himself, but also empowers his associate devotees with the required energy to execute his mission of an incarnation. It is also stated in Bhagavad Gita that the Lord and his associates descend on the earth many times. Okay. Similarly, the Lord takes with him all his associates when he disappears from the earth. Now listen to this very carefully. It's a very important point. The power and energy which were bestowed upon Arjuna were required for fulfillment of the mission of the Lord. But when his mission was fulfilled, the emergency powers were withdrawn from Arjuna, because the astounding powers of Arjuna, which were astonishing even to the denizens of heaven, were no longer required, and they were not meant for going back home, back to Godhead. So going back to Godhead is a different power. It's not your ability to manage. It's not your incredible psychology when you're on book distribution. It's not your scholarship. Those are vibhutis, those are Krishna's powers, and they're given to you to execute a particular mission. But the power you need to go back to Godhead has nothing to do with any material opulence of vibhuti. It has to do with your sincerity. So when we're no longer required to do a particular mission, Krishna can take away those powers. They're not required. So now Arjuna had to prepare to go back to Godhead. Krishna took away all those powers. In fact, those powers can be an impediment, because the way we experience bhakti in this world as a servant of Krishna, our bhakti is Krishna, you are our maintainer and protector. That's our bhakti. Just like a mother, what's the child's love for the mother? The child's love for the mother is, you are my maintainer and protector. So if you depend on your material powers, and you depend on your opulences, and you think that by these opulences you can control the world or protect, or these opulences will let you go back to Godhead, that it's my managerial power, that's my bhakti, it's my speaking ability, that's my bhakti, then Krishna can take them away. And in fact, as soon as they're no longer used, needed, or as soon as they become an impediment, then Krishna takes them away so that you can experience his devotion, which is what? Which is, I am dependent on you. And when you're dependent on Krishna, he reciprocates more and you develop more love for him. Just like the child. The child is dependent on the mother, so the mother is more caring. And therefore the child experiences more of the mother's love when the child is young and incapable than when he's older. Because when he's older, he's a little bit more independent. He has his own powers. So the mother's affection is not as intense. So similarly with us, when we feel capable and we feel that our opulence and powers are ours, it's an impediment to our bhakti, because we're less dependent on Krishna. And therefore we experience less of his reciprocation. So we can see Arjuna's mood as a devotee is all he can think about is that everything good in his life was the mercy of Krishna. And that's what's going to happen now. I'll just read the English. I have just lost him whose separation for a moment would render all universes unfavorable and void, like bodies without life. Just as the Paramatma gives life to the living entity and it gives life to the universe, so Arjuna's life, Arjuna's powers is dependent on Krishna. And as Krishna withdrew his energy, then Arjuna felt like he was lifeless. Only by his merciful strength was I able to conquer all the lusty princesses assembled at the palace of King Drupada for the selection of the bridegroom. With my bow and arrow, I could pierce the fish target and thereby gain the hand of Draupadi. So he's thinking he has a beautiful wife, Draupadi, but he's not walking around with his beautiful wife. Look what a man I am. You know, look how successful I am. I have this beautiful woman. But he's thinking, this is only my wife. Even by Krishna's mercy, I received a wife. Only by Krishna's mercy am I successful. It's Krishna's power. And we know what an amazing task that, what power Arjuna had by Krishna's grace. In the Swayamvara of Draupadi, there was a fish on the ceiling. It was not a real fish. It wasn't that. It was a replica of a fish, and there was a wheel over the fish, and the wheel was turning, and there was a pot of water that was shaking, and through the pot of water he had to pierce the eye of the fish to win the hand of Draupadi. So he's thinking of my powers, but he's not thinking they're my powers. He's thinking that they're Krishna's powers. Because he was near to me, it was possible for me to conquer with great dexterity the powerful king of heaven, Indradev, along with his demigod associates, and thus enable the fire god to devastate the Kandava forest. And only by his grace was the demon named Maya saved from the blazing Kandava forest, and thus we could build our assembly house of wonderful architectural workmanship, where all the princesses assembled during the performance of the Raja Suya Yajna and paid you tributes. So there was a demon, Maya Danavan. He was in a forest, and he got into conflict with Krishna. And then Krishna wanted to kill him. And I think by a Sudarshana Chakra, the whole forest was burning. And then this demon, he took shelter of Arjuna. And then when he took shelter of Arjuna, then immediately he was protected. In other words, Krishna wanted to kill him when he took shelter. So Arjuna's remembering this. Krishna wanted to kill the demon. The demon took shelter of me, and because I was Krishna's devotee, then the demon was protected. And Prabhupada in the purport says, devotees are therefore more merciful than the Lord. And in devotional service, the mercy of a devotee is more valuable than the mercy of the Lord, because Arjuna saved this demon from Krishna, and Krishna was going to kill him. And then the demon asked, Prabhupada also says this, Lord Krishna, the demon felt obliged to Arjuna, wanted to do some service to show his gratefulness, but Arjuna declined to accept anything from him in exchange. So Arjuna didn't want to want any benediction. But Krishna, being pleased with Maya, he wanted to kill him. Now he was pleased with the demon because he took shelter of his devotee, and therefore he asked him to render service to Yudhisthira and Arjuna by building a wonderful assembly house. This was the assembly house of the Pandavas. And then, and Prabhupada explains, the process is by the grace of the devotee, the mercy of the Lord is obtained. It's okay. And by the mercy of the Lord, a chance to serve the devotee is obtained. So he's just thinking of Krishna's mercy. He got this assembly house just because this demon took shelter of him. Your respectable younger brother, who possesses the strength of 10,000 elephants killed. Come in. Can you get it to go? Killed by his grace, Jarasandha, whose feet were worshipped by many kings. Anyway, we're not going to have time today, but what happens is Arjuna remembers his activities and how he was protected by Krishna. And then he begins to remember his intimate relationship with Krishna. Anyway, it's a very wonderful story. And then he becomes in tremendous distress. He has so much distress and separation from Krishna, and then he begins to remember the Bhagavad Gita. And then he becomes relieved from his distress. What this is all going to lead to is the Yudhisthira seeing that Krishna has left the planet, then Yudhisthira retires. And this will lead to the enthronement of Maharaj Prickett, which, interesting enough, will also lead to the reappearance of Krishna in the form of the Bhagavatam. So Krishna appeared. So this is also in terms of the history of the Bhagavatam. So we'll end there for today. Okay, let's see. If I can just read the... Your respectable younger brother, who possesses the strength of 10,000 elephants, killed by his grace Jarasandha, whose feet were worshipped by many kings. These kings had been brought for sacrifice in Jarasandha's Mahabharava Yajna, but they were thus released. Later they paid tribute to your mercy. And then he's remembering also with this demon Jarasandha, and how by the instructions of Krishna, Bhimasena was able to defeat him. He's just seeing in every instance it's Krishna's mercy, his instructions, his guidance. Because Jarasandha, there was a king called Brihadratha, and he wasn't able to have children, and he got some benediction. But with his wives, so each wife became pregnant. He couldn't have children. They each gave birth to one half a child. And then this demon, so he left. So this demon came named Jara. Is this rasa or affection for Krishna? So we should listen to these verses in that mood. So this is Arjuna's mood, glorifying Krishna as the protector and maintainer, and seeing Krishna in every case as the source of his success. Your respectable younger brother, who possesses the strength of 10,000 elephants, killed by his grace Jarasandha, whose feet were worshipped by many kings. These kings have been brought for sacrifice in Jarasandha's Mahabharava Yajna, but they were thus released. Later they paid tribute to your majesty. So he's remembering. This is his history of his life. And he's remembering the powerful demon Jarasandha and how he had attacked so many times the city of Mathura. He was such a powerful demon. Prabhupada describes in the purport that there was a king, Brihadratha, who was very, very prosperous, but he could not have any children, so he went to the forest, and they gave him some type of prasad, a mango, in some sacrifice, and the queens ate it. And both queens came pregnant, but they each gave birth to half a child. So the king rejected them because they were deformed. You can imagine a child, some, you know, with no arms and no legs, but the child had like no, he's missing a half. So he was rejected. But then this demon called Jara, she came and she connected them. And then she went to the king with the children, with the child, and said, "This is your son. By my mystic powers, I have connected him. But please name him after me." So the child was named Jarasandha. He was connected by Jara. Jarasandha. And then he was a very powerful demon. And then later, what does Prabhupada said? Lord Krishna wanted to kill him. But he also wanted that those who served as military men for Jarasandha might not be killed. So therefore, he didn't fight to kill him in the war. And they adopted a plan, and Krishna, Bhima, and Arjuna went in the dress of Brahmins. Jarasandha was not a devotee, but he was very charitable. He had some sense of culture. So what they requested from him is that he engage in fight with Bhima. And Bhima had a very, very difficult time, and then Krishna gave him the hint that he was connected in this way, and then Bhima was able to bifurcate him. So, and therefore, feeling obliged to the Pandavas, all these kings, they paid tribute to Yudhisthira. So he's remembering how Yudhisthira was glorified by all these kings, but it was just by the grace of Krishna.
Patyastavadimakaklipta mahavisheka slagishta charu kabaram kitavaisavayam sprishtam vikirya padayo patitasru mukya yastatsyo kritahate shavamukta klesha.
It was he only who loosened the hair of all the wives of the miscreants who dared open the cluster of your queen's hair, which had been nicely dressed and sanctified for the great Rajasuya sacrificial ceremony. At that time, she fell down at the feet of Lord Krishna with tears in her eyes. So he's remembering how Krishna protected Draupadi when Dushasana, when he wanted to disrobe Draupadi. Because Draupadi was such a beautiful queen, and we read before that Arjuna was able to win her in the Swayamvara, and there were many other princesses. And she had such beauty that they were all intensely attached to her. And you can imagine in a great contest of Kshatriyas how envious they were when Arjuna was able to win her. And Karna wasn't even able to get a chance because he was immediately rejected by King Drupada because he was not born in the proper family. So it was actually him who told Dushasana that you take down her hair, which is a great insult. So he's remembering this, and he's remembering how Krishna protects his devotee. This is the mood of Krishna. He protects his devotee. This is Krishna's wonderful personality, that he reciprocates the love and devotion of his devotees. In Bhagavad Gita it says, Samaham Sarva Bhuteshu Name Dveshta. I'm equal to everyone, but for my devotee, I give special protection. This is part of Krishna's personality. A person means that he reciprocates in love. So this is Krishna's supremacy, that he's the supreme person. Therefore, he reciprocates with the devotee's dependence and surrender by protecting him and maintaining him. Therefore, one of the six symptoms of surrender is, what is that? Krishna is the maintainer and Krishna is the protector. Because that's what we experience when we take shelter of Krishna and depend on him. When we depend on Krishna, he's always there to guide us and protect us and maintain us. This is the purpose, the real purpose of sannyas, especially in days of yore. People would go out into the forest just without any material arrangement, just so that they can experience how Krishna will maintain them, how Krishna will protect them. And therefore they can develop their love and devotion for Krishna when they see the personal relationship that they have with Krishna. So they're thinking that the queen, Draupadi, was being disrobed by so many Maharati, so many powerful people, and Krishna protected them. Not only did Krishna protect them, but he There's a verse in Mahabharata that anyone who becomes the enemy of my devotee becomes my enemy. This is also an expression of love. That if you harm someone who's your friend, then that person becomes your enemy. So Prabhupada says, in other words, all the wives of the Kuru family became widows because of Dushasana's insulting a great devotee of the Lord. The Lord can tolerate insults upon himself by any miscreant because the father tolerates even insults from the son, but he never tolerates insults upon his devotees. By insulting a great soul, one has to forego all the results of pious acts and benedictions also. So this is part of Krishna's reciprocation for his devotees' surrender. He protects them and therefore annihilates those who who harm the devotees. Krishna appears, Pritanaya sadunam vanashaya chadushruta.
Yo no jagopa vana etya daranta kritra durvasa sori rachita ayutagra bhugya shakkana shishtam upayuja yatastri lokim triptam amamsta salile vinimagna sangha.
So we'll continue listening to Arjuna's. You have to have that, you have to see the mood. Yudhisthira just asked Arjuna, so has your friend who protect you, is he left? And then Arjuna begins to remember his friend and remembering, and he's looking at himself. I've lost everything now. Krishna's mission is finished. And all those powers I had are withdrawn, and they're his powers. And then he begins to remember in time again how successful, how powerful he was, and how Krishna protected them. During our exile, Durvasa Muni, who eats with his 10,000 disciples, intrigued with our enemies to put us in a dangerous trouble. At that time, he, Lord Krishna, simply by accepting the remnants of food, saved us. By accepting food thus, the assembly of Munis, while bathing in the river, felt sumptuously fed, and all the three worlds were also satisfied. So this was also Krishna protecting and maintaining. Arjuna is looking now, not so much, later he'll see his intimate relationship with Krishna as friendship, but he's seeing now Krishna as the master and the protector. It's like if you have a relationship of love with a superior, what should you remember? What will invoke your ecstasy? Their kindness to you, their mercy to you, you're the protection. In Rasa Shastra, one of the udipins, or it means the stimuluses for ecstatic love for a servant, is to remember the master's mercy or kindness. And kindness means undeserved. So he's remembering. And if you remember, if you had an affectionate relationship with your mother, what did you remember? You remember how she maintained you and nourished you. You remember your father, how he protected you, how he maintained. So he's thinking of the story of Durvasa Muni. Duryodhana invited Durvasa Muni to his palace, and Duryodhana was a very expert king, and satisfied him by such royal accommodations and facilities to him. And Durvasa Muni is an incarnation, partial incarnation of Lord Shiva. And Lord Shiva is Ashutosh. He's easily pleased and easily angered. So he said, whatever benediction you want, I will give you by my mystic powers, whatever benediction you can have. He said, I just have one benediction. You please go to Draupadi and the Pandavas in the afternoon and give them the benediction of coming there so that they can all serve you. But he gave them the time that was after the time that they took lunch. And Draupadi had a benediction that she had this mystical pot that could feed sumptuous food to unlimited people for the day until she herself took her own meal. So Diodna wanted Durvasa Muni, knowing that he was easily pleased but easily angered, to come there and be insulted and destroy the Pandavas. So we can see this scene. He comes with his 10,000 disciples, completely demanding. And then Yudhisthira doesn't know what to do. But then he stalled for time and said, please, you know, just come. He received them. Finish your noontime duties by taking bath in the river, and by that time the food will be prepared. And then Prabhupada writes in the purport, when the devotees are put into difficulty, they have an opportunity to recollect the Lord with rapt attention. So this was such... We don't understand the calamitous and fearful situations. These heavy sod, they're going to be demanding, and they're going to come back. And we're not going to have anything for them to eat. They're going to be furious. One thing about people who are impersonalists, the one weakness they have is their anger. Their anger. They're not satisfied. So Prabhupada says, so Draupadi was thinking of Lord Krishna in a dangerous position, and the all-pervading Lord could at once know the dangerous position of his devotees. He therefore came right on the scene and asked Draupadi to give whatever food she might have in her stock. This is the relationship. When you're dependent, Krishna is there. And therefore, sometimes Krishna, out of kindness, what is that verse? Yasyaham anugrahami harish ye tadanai shanai. That when Krishna is merciful, he takes away. Why? Because when he takes away, it's to give bhakti. When Krishna is taking away from us, it's only to give devotion. Because if we are in the conception that we're the possessor and that we have independent powers, we won't take shelter of Krishna, and therefore he can't give himself to us. Therefore he takes away to give. So we're in a difficult situation and we see that Krishna is taking away. If we use that situation to depend on him, we can understand that he's actually being very merciful and he's wanting to give us. But it's not that he has to take away. He has to take away the false ego. Not the object, but the conception that it is ours. And if we have the conception that we are the possessor of the object, he could also take the object. So they immediately depended on Krishna, and Krishna immediately came, and he told Draupadi, let me see what's there. And what did he find, Dadu? A little piece of...
one grain of rice and a piece of leaf in the sojourn.
A piece of...
one piece.
Only. And he ate it. And because it was given to him with so much devotion, he was satisfied. And then he said, he asked Draupadi, now you call for your guests. And Bhima went to the river and he said, why are you delaying? Come, the food is ready. The food is ready. But then because the Brahmins, because of Lord Krishna accepting a little particle of food, they felt sumptuously fed. And they were embarrassed and they had to leave and they were protected. Now, Prabhupada, it says here, and all the three worlds were satisfied. So Prabhupada makes a comment, which is very interesting. The incident proves that Lord is the greatest mystic, and therefore he is known as Yogeshwar. Another instruction is that every householder must offer food to the Lord, and the result will be that everyone, even a company of guests numbering 10,000, will be satisfied. Because of the Lord being satisfied. This is the way of devotional service. Somehow or other, you know, Dadu, whenever there's always enough prasadam.
Krishna drank water and
built
heavily, like Vesuvius.
After eating.
After
He took some water and he belched.
Big tongues of 10,000 disciples. They were big eaters. They were all bulging.
It was by his influence only. This is his ecstatic remembrances. It was by his influence only that in a fight I was able to astonish the personality of God, Lord Shiva, and his wife, the daughter of Mount Himalaya. Thus he, Lord Krishna, became pleased with me and awarded me his own weapon. What is that? The Pashupati? You know which weapon that is?
Pashupati.
Other demigods also delivered their respective weapons to me, and in addition, I was able to reach the heavenly planets in this present body and was allowed a half-elevated seat. So, because he was a devotee of Krishna, he satisfied Lord Shiva. But by satisfying the demigods, Krishna is not satisfied. Prabhupada says this, that the idea is that one who is favored by Lord Shiva or any demigod may not necessarily be favored by the Supreme Lord, like Ravana. But because he satisfied Krishna, then all the demigods were satisfied with him. So even he was saying the benedictions he got from the demigods, like the great weapon, he wasn't seeing that independent of Krishna. This is the nature of a devotee. He's chaste. Everything is by Krishna's mercy, everything. His qualities are by Krishna's mercy, whatever gifts are bestowed upon him by others are Krishna's mercy. And then he's remembering that he went to the heavenly planets and he was able to reach this elevated seat. And then he was also thinking philosophically how you can only elevate yourself in the planetary by such great qualification. But what was his qualification? He was a Kshatriya. His qualification is that simply he was Krishna's friend and devotee. And therefore he was able to achieve what even the greatest yogis have difficulty achieving. Of only those who all reactions, Prabhupada quotes Bhagavad Gita 9:21, Shine punye marta kritam viloka. Only when your reactions are gone do you're able to go and you're in mode of goodness. And he was in the self-same body. He was honored by Indradev, all by Krishna's mercy. When I stayed for some days as a guest in the heavenly planets, all the heavenly demigods, including King Indradev, took shelter of my arms, which were marked with the Gandiva bow, to kill the demon named Nivatika Vacha. O King, descendant of Ajamid, at the present moment I am bereft of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, by whose influence I was so powerful. Prabhupada in the purport said, the Lord is all powerful, and by His grace, His pure devotee can be as powerful as he may desire, and there is no limit to it. When the Lord withdraws His power from anyone, He is powerless by the will of the Lord. The military strength of the Kauravas was like an ocean in which there dwelled many invincible existences, and thus it was insurmountable. But because of his friendship, I, seated on the chariot, was able to cross over it. And only by his grace was I able to regain the cows and also collect by force many helmets of the kings, which were bedecked with jewels that were sources of all brilliance. So he was able to conquer. He was so powerful. In Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna is called Rishikesh. Krishna is called Rishikesh. Rishikesh means controller of the senses. So when you're in a battle, it's all based on your senses, the working senses and the... What are the other senses called? Knowledge acquiring sense. In a battle, how do you become great? Someone is throwing a sword and you duck at the right moment and you put your hand up and you turn this way. But Arjuna was Rishikesh. Krishna was Rishi. He's the controller of the senses. So Arjuna kept on addressing him as Rishikesh. Because Krishna was directly, he's directly controlling the sense of his pure devotee. And therefore he's able to do such extraordinary things. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Kontiya Pita Janahi Name Bhakta Pranashati, declare it boldly, my devotee never perishes. That means even the devotee's words. When we are preaching, we sometimes, I made a devotee. We never make a devotee. Krishna's making the devotee. We become Krishna's instrument, and he works through us perfectly. And when one has that humble mood and is surrendered to Krishna, then Krishna can work perfectly through us without any resistance, because we allow Krishna to become our leader. When we're surrendered, we allow Krishna to guide us and become our leader, and we become perfect and powerful, but by his grace. So although there were many commanders on the other side that were so powerful, Arjuna was the single only commander of the Pandavas. The first verse of the Bhagavad Gita, Dharma Kshetre, Kurukshetre, Samaveta, Yutsava, Mamaka Pandavas. What did my sons and the sons of Pandu do, being desirous to fight? Dhritarashtra was concerned. What did my sons and the sons of Pandu do? Because the Pandavas had fewer Akshohinis. But because they had Krishna, then they were successful and powerful. And that's the vision of a devotee. The vision of a devotee is when he sees the presence of Krishna by the surrender of the devotees, the devotee is successful beyond the material situation. And that's the conclusion of the Bhagavad Gita. The first and last verses of the Bhagavad Gita are connected. Because the first verse gives the vision where Dhritarashtra is seeing as a materialist that I have more armies, I have more power. But the hint in the verse is Dharma Kshetra, Kurukshetra. It was a holy place. The influence of Krishna was there. Therefore, although he was materially inferior, from the vision of a devotee, he was successful because he would be perfectly guided, protected, and inspired by Krishna. And therefore, the last verse in the Bhagavad Gita is wherever there is Krishna, the master of mystics, and wherever there is Arjuna, his devotee, it is guaranteed to be opulence, morality, victory. Everything we want is there when we are actually perfectly surrendered to Krishna. Victory is there, opulence is there, and this is the vision of a devotee in spreading Krishna consciousness. His vision is that auspiciousness will come from surrender to Krishna. This is the first Chanaka shloka. It says something like dharmasya sukasya. When you perform dharma, or when you do what's right, and ultimately what's right is those activities which bring you closer to Krishna. When you do what's right, then there's auspiciousness. And that's a Krishna conscious leader. He has the strength to act on principles, and knowing by doing that, all auspiciousness will come. But when he does not have strong faith and has pride, then, and tries to control independently, he deviates from the principles. So he's remembering this. It was he only who withdrew the duration of life from everyone, and who in the battlefield withdrew the speculative power and strength of enthusiasm from the great military phalanx made by the Kauravas, headed by Bhishma, Karna, Drona, Salya. Their arrangement was expert and more than adequate, but he, Lord Krishna, while going forward, did all this. So he's thinking of the battle, all these powerful warriors. How did he win? Krishna helped Arjuna win despite his inferiority. How? By withdrawing what? The saha, their strength. No, saha, their power. Oja, their strength. Manamsi, their thought power. You know, sometimes you see in a battle that somebody will make a foolish mistake, so Krishna withdrew their intelligence. Manamsi, Ayu, and even their life. And Prabhupada is always giving Bhagavad Gita to give us a frame of reference. And Prabhupada quotes, Sarvasya chaham hiri sannivishto matasmatir gyanam apoanam cha. From I come remembrance, knowledge, and strength. So not only is I am successful because of Krishna, but my enemies are unsuccessful because of their lack of surrender to Krishna. I took Krishna, they took their armies. And I am victorious, even though I am inferior. Materially I am inferior, but actually I'm superior because I have Krishna. And I'm a surrendered devotee and he's using me as an instrument. And it's Krishna's success and it's Krishna's power. So he's remembering this in great ecstasy. Because when you have devotion for someone, that devotion is inspired by their qualities. We love Krishna because Krishna is all attractive. But that doesn't make our love impure. But it inspires our love. And once you have that love, you're selfless. We love Krishna and we're selfless. We'll do anything for Krishna, but why do we love him? Because he's all powerful, he's all beautiful, he's all strong, he's all famous. We're attracted to Krishna and he's invoked our love. So the devotee is seeing everything in the world as Krishna's opulence and power. And everything is inspiring his love because he knows the source is Krishna. And any opulence, it's Krishna's. Any beauty is Krishna's. I am the strength of the strong. The taste of water, everything is Krishna's. So he's remembering so many pastimes. And then he's all power. And by every tact and the tactics in the war, I didn't have to do anything. They were thinking so many things, but Krishna gave me all direction and all advice. Great generals like Bhishma, Drona, Karna, Purishrava, Sisarma, Salya, Jayadratha, and Balika all directed their invincible weapons against me. So he's remembering the battle where Bhishma, Drona, Pramukhata, that his chariot was drawn right in front of the other armies, and all these powerful warriors were focused on him to kill him. He's remembering that scene. And he's remembering there must have been some doubt, some fright in his mind. But by his, Lord Krishna's grace, they could not even touch a hair on my head. Similarly, Prahlad Maharaj, the supreme devotee of Lord Nrisingadeva, was unaffected by the weapons the demons used against him. So he compared himself to Prahlad Maharaj, who was so much powerful, more powerful than Hiranyakashipu, giving everything to kill his son, poisoning him, throwing him into a pit of snakes, throwing him off a cliff, trying to kill him in so many ways. Thus, no one can kill the devotee of the Lord. Similarly, Arjuna was also saved by the Lord, although dangerous weapons were employed by his great opponents like Bhishma. And he was remembering. He was remembering how Krishna was there, always protecting him. Why? Because Krishna reciprocates the love of his devotees. Krishna loves his devotees. And Arjuna was experiencing the love of his friend, who is there, who is protecting him, who is there in his need. And what a friend. Not just an ordinary friend, but a friend who can protect him from the direct hostility, aggression, and determination of the greatest warriors on the planet. So Krishna is all attractive. It was by his mercy only that my enemies neglected to kill me when I descended from my chariot to get water for my thirsty horses. And it was due to my lack of esteem for my Lord that I dared engage him as my chariot driver. For he is worshipped and offered services by the best men to attain salvation. So he was remembering, now he was remembering Krishna's power. And now he's beginning to remember Krishna's sweetness. And there's some disturbance in his mind because he's thinking Krishna is so powerful and I've engaged him as my chariot driver. Sometimes in the West we don't understand this, but in India the driver is like such a position. Because in a mess, even a rich person drives his own car, but in India, never. Only the lowest person. And again, mentioning that that was Arjuna, that was Krishna's greatness. That he reciprocates with his devotee. And the love and the way he exchanges is his greatness. Now what's going to happen now, we discussed a few verses here. Till 16. What verse is this? This is 17. Where he discussed how Krishna protected him and the Pandavas by his power. Now in these next three verses, some of the intimate dealings between Krishna and the Pandavas, and his lamentation that not only is Krishna's protection God, just like your father may have protected you, your mother may have protected you, she may have nourished you, but also the sweet, intimate dealings. You may remember not only how your father protected you, but how you wrestled with your father out of intimacy and love. So he's remembering. Of course, again, in the our world sometimes, we can't have so much appreciation for these pastimes because in the West, we don't grow up experiencing love. Sometimes we don't have the love of the mother. We don't have the love of the father. You know, it's not like the sense there, but... So he's remembering this. Of course, he's remembering his mercy. And the Prabhupada describes in the battlefield, water is so necessary because people are thirsty, bleeding, you know, the war. So in a battle, there's always a question of water. Yes, and Krishna, just by his arrow, bore a deep well, so there was enough. So he's remembering how he was protected. And now he's feeling, he's regretting that he had acted so, allowed Krishna to serve him. To allow your master to serve you. Then one is feeling very ashamed. Prabhupada describes, the Lord, however, descends to attract all by his specific pastimes, and thus he plays the part of the most perfect master, friend, son, and lover. So this love, where there's not a sense of God's divinity, is actually a superior type of love, because it's pure love. As soon as you have the sense of God's divinity, there's something external to love within that relationship. And that's a sense of obligation or duty. If you see Krishna as God, then automatically there's some obligation that I have to act in a particular way. There's an etiquette. I must pay my obeisances, and if I don't, it's offensive. I must watch what I say. So that weakens that love. That's why Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to experience and propagate spontaneous love. The sense of love where there's no sense of divinity of God. Therefore there's only love. And that love is more intense and more pleasurable to God. Therefore by his yogamaya potency he covers his position and covers the devotee's vision so he can experience that love. Therefore, Mother Yasoda was very, very upset when she saw, and she looked in Krishna's mouth, and she saw the universal form. Because now she was thinking, this is God. And especially for the mother, he's God. He doesn't need my help. So there's no motherly love unless the child is dependent. So she was thinking, this is ruining my love. And Krishna also, now my mother will not be able to love me. I won't be able to relish that love. I better cover again by Yoga Maya. So Mother Yasoda can experience that love and I can experience that love. Because you can't love, when, as soon as you have that sense of divinity, the love is weakened. The basic feeling of parental love is called anugraha, mercy. But mercy means kindness. And kindness means that the object of your love must be undeserving. He must be, there must be need. But if there's God, there's no need, and therefore there's no love. Rude. So now Arjuna is remembering, O king, his jokings and frank talks were pleasing and beautifully decorated with smiles. His addresses unto me, O son of Pritha, O friend, hey Partha, hey Arjuna, Sake Kuru Nandaneti, O Partha, O Arjuna, O Sakhi, O friend, Kuru Nandana, and all such heartinesses are now remembered by me, and thus I am overwhelmed that he was treating me as equal, as friend, as familiar relation. Generally, both of us used to live together and sleep, sit, and loiter together. And at the time of advertising oneself for acts of chivalry, sometimes if there were any irregularity, I used to reproach him by saying, my friend, you are very truthful. Even in those hours when his value was minimized, he being the supreme soul used to tolerate all those utterings of mine, excusing me exactly as a true friend excuses his true friend, or a father excuses his son. O emperor, now I am separated from my friend and dear most well-wisher, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and therefore my heart appears to be void of everything. This is spiritual depression. Govinda Varahaname. Depression means that everything looks black. There's no value in anything. So in the separation from Krishna, the world becomes vacant. It becomes black. There's nothing of value. There's nothing good. So now that my friend and dear most well-wisher has gone, there's nothing good. I'm void of everything. In his absence, I have been defeated by a number of infidel cowherd men while I was guarding the bodies of all the wives of Krishna. See, when Krishna left, he called Arjuna. And this is past times in the 11th canto, and he told Arjuna, you take my wives to Dwarka. So that was his last order from Krishna. And he, Arjuna, the powerful, it says some, he was by infidel cowherd men. It was like some of these Brijbasi villagers, you know, these skinny dacoits. And they attacked Arjuna. And he was defeated by them. And he's remembering that I've lost everything. He couldn't even string his bow. He couldn't remember what?
The mystic weapons.
He couldn't remember his mystic weapons. He couldn't string his bow.
He couldn't shoot arrows.
Without Krishna, his power was gone. And defeated by infidel cowherd men. But it tells, Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur said, how is this possible that Krishna's wives were kidnapped by infidel cowherd men? So he looked in the Puranas, and there was one story of Ashtavakra Muni. Ashta means eight. He was bent in eight sides. So sometimes you see that it's unfortunate, someone bending and he couldn't walk. So initially they pleased him, so this Muni was so powerful, said, you'll get Krishna as your husband. And then they laughed at him when they saw him walk. And he became insulted and he said, you'll get Krishna as your husband, but then you will be... they'll be kidnapped by some cowherd men. And then they began serving him again. He said, and even though you're kidnapped by the cowherd men, Krishna will appear as the cowherd men. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, if he sees some discrepancy in Shastra, he becomes depressed, even sometimes contemplating suicide. So he has to find out how it's possible. It has to be, because he has so much faith in Shastra. There's also that story where he was, the mantra that had spoke 24 and a half moons, and he counted the syllables, it was 25 or something, and then he was, how is this possible that Shastra is wrong? And then he found some obscure grammatical rule where some syllable is produced as half. So he found this out. But still, Arjuna lost his power. I have the very same Gandiva bow, the same arrows, the same chariot drawn by the same horses, and I use them as the same Arjuna to whom all the kings offered their due respects. But in the absence of Lord Krishna, all of them, at a moment's notice, have become null and void. It is exactly like offering clarified butter on ashes, accumulating money with a magic wand, or sowing seeds on barren land. So electrical energies, it's given, it's taken away. All my power is given and taken away, like a child's play, Prabhupada said. The parent gives toys, takes them away. So, finish. As we discussed more than once, one should not be puffed up by borrowed plumes. All energies and powers are derived from the Supreme Source, Lord Krishna, and they act as long as he desires and ceases to function as soon as he withdraws. It's like clarified butter on ashes. The opulence is there, but no power. Sowing seeds, no power. Come in. Come in. Come on in, Virgin Heart. Okay. We're finished now. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.